Okay. We'll go ahead and call the common council meeting to order. It is 6:00 PM on Tuesday, January 28th, 2020. Let's stand and say the pledge of allegiance. Roll call, please.
Weigle.
Here.
Baca absent. Reffitt.
Here.
Crowder.
Here.
Romano.
Present.
In front of you are the minutes from our last meeting. And it was a separate item in the Dropbox if you didn't notice that. So, our last council meeting on January 20, that's not right, January 20 or 14th, I think. Did you see that change? The top of the council minutes? It says January 28th, which is today. Yeah. Any changes or corrections? Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second. Motion by Jennifer, seconded by Dan. Any further discussion? All those in favor, show by the usual sign. It is unanimous of those present. Next up is the, is it really the 28th?
Yeah.
28th Annual Christmas Lighting Awards. Jennifer.
Okay. So, on behalf of the city, we'd like to thank everyone who participated in this year's holiday decorating contest that we put on. We drove around the city for about two nights looking at all the lights and making our vote. And tonight we have the winners here to pick up their prizes. So,
do you want to get pictures now? Okay. So, the Southeast District winner was Ron and Susan Fricky.
Nice job, Coach.
The Northwest District winner is George Crump.
I want to thank you all, and I don't got you over to do much more yet, but I'm just turning it over to somebody else.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you for what you've done to make our community look great and welcoming and inviting and definitely having a Christmas spirit. So thank you for all that you do. This is usually the time I tell you if you don't want to watch the whole meeting, you're free to meet whenever you'd like. So, thanks, everybody. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
You want? Yeah, you can.
Okay. Next up is the Whitley County Soil and Water Update. John. Just the MS4 update.
So, hopefully you all got a copy of the report through your Dropbox. And I'm just going to highlight a few things. Since the 2015 report that we've come to the other year and saying IDEM's going to release their new permits, it might actually happen this coming year. So, and then another change in regulations, DNRs are now using the best available flood hazard areas that they develop for permits under the Indiana Flood Control Act. And one of the drains that's been impacted by that is the Shirk Assay Drain, which is on the north side of town. And so there is a new flood hazard area, according to DNR, and it may affect the plans for the proposed Pinnacle Solar Park. I have not seen any plans, but I don't know what kind of impact will have, the possibility or impact, the plans for that. And then I put in a message about Senate Bill 46, which could have impacted the collection of stormwater utility fees. But I've been informed that it died in committee. There was not any support for it other than a sponsor, so that's gone away.
Yeah.
In the report, I included the updated charts for E. coli, and one of the reasons that I did that is the completion of the new water sewer overflow project should reduce the amount of E. coli that we find in the city's receiving waters. But it might take a few years before we have an idea of what and how that effect is. E. coli is pretty tricky. It varies a lot. There could be other factors besides the combined sewer overflows. Going through some of the minimum control measures, it looks like the new MS4 permit is going to combine the public education and outreach and the public participation and involvement control measures. So that may simplify compliance with the permits. MCM, minimum control measure number 3, which is illicit discharge detection and elimination. We work together with the city's food treatment coordinator, the county health department, and we came up with a customized brochure with the Indiana Association of Floodplain and Stormwater Managers. And we distributed that to the businesses that we inspected for the pre-treatment program. So I included copies of the brochure towards the end of the report. And litter and improper trash disposal was a continuing concern through the MS4. So hopefully that brochure will have some impact. The construction and post-construction minimum control measures. Looks like the new MS4 permit is going to require us to conduct annual training for builders, developers, and contractors. And it seems to me like it would probably be good to partner with some of our neighboring MS4s to conduct those trainings. And so the Warsaw MS4 is having a training in February, and I'm planning to attend that to see how they're doing things. They've done that for 2 or 3 years now, and it seems to have been pretty successful. They're expecting an attendance of 100 folks representing different contractors and developers.
That's what I was going to ask about, that is how they... Is that a kind of at-will kind of thing where we have to do it, but individuals can choose to show up or not? Or is that a mandate that if they are a contractor within the city limits, that they have to attend that kind of scenario?
That would be up to the city's discretion. Okay. There are some municipalities that kind of require contractors that work in their community. Mm-hmm. They have somebody attend the training that they sponsor. Johnson. I don't believe worse on that, but I think it's more that it is up to the contractors and developers to send somebody in.
Johnson.
I think it's a good way to establish better communication between the MS4 and the folks that are working in the community, just so they kind of know what our expectations are, and hopefully it smooths out some things. I think things are running pretty well, but there's always going to be better communication.
Mm-hmm. I was just curious, as obviously there's lots of different individuals that come through here that are builders or contractors or whatever, and so trying to place a mandatory scenario in there would be really challenging. So it's more about curiosity of how cities and towns would go about doing that kind of thing than.
Is that through the planning department or the planning building instead of the MS4 authority, or is that?
I think there would be a lot of flexibility if the planning building department wanted to host that. That would be an option. Obviously the MS4 would coordinate things with them to make sure. It's probably not a bad idea for planning and development to do some trainings or some informational workshops for the developers and contractors, so they know about other requirements, not just what's required for erosion and sedimentation control, but other expectations from the building department and the planning perspective, the highway department. There's lots of options for that. Contractors and engineers that work for MDOT, I believe they have mandatory MDOT, and of course that's a different regulatory level. So there are some options to explore there. I thought his first start would be to go to that Warsaw training and see how they're doing it. So the control measure for the municipal operations and your housekeeping, it's another one of those that since 2015 we've been expecting our program to be audited by IBM, and it hasn't happened yet. I don't know whether it'll happen in 2020 or not, but it's a possibility. And just a couple of items in there to highlight. The department does an excellent job of managing their trash and litter. And we estimated they collected and disposed of 246 tons of garbage and trash last year. The water department does the stormwater conveyance maintenance, the storm sewers and catch basins. They inspected 50 catch basins and removed 600 gallons of debris last year. And they also installed 90 catch basins and 1,200 feet of pipe to fix some of the drainage problems that have been encountered at various locations in the city.
I think you're going to see that increase, the work that they're going to be doing on stormwater, especially stormwater structures. I think you're going to see that increase this year.
Mike has indicated that he plans to increase that in the coming years, so that'll be a good thing. The street department, the street sweeping program, that's a really important part of reducing pollution. So water pollution, we estimate they removed 267,500 pounds of dirt and debris from the city streets last year. And city mechanic recycled 760 gallons of used motor oil, so we got that from the pollution problems. And those are the things that I wanted to highlight. If you have any other questions about the MS4 activities,
Obviously, you talked a little bit about what you think may be coming up in the future, but how are those things that are kind of trickling down from the state on best management practices or things like that, how do you foresee over the next, let's say, 4 to 5 years, what are going to be the things that this body is going to have to take on to either change our regulations or be able to effectively respond to state mandates that are coming down?
Well, there may need to be some revisions to some of the ordinances, so that would be one place where you guys would be involved. It's kind of hard to predict all of those without actually having permits finalized, but that would be one thing that I would see would be some changes in the ordinances. There are some things in there that, from my standpoint, could be improved a little bit, similar to the development manual. Sometimes reading through that's kind of confusing, so that might be something that we work at.
Yeah.
That would be more, the board of public works that would be involved in reviewing that, discussing that. One of the conferences was the building manual, I saw a meeting every year in Indianapolis. And one of the speakers there, kind of made a prediction, and he said that in the future, the regulator is going to be a citizen who has a cell phone camera and is savvy with social media. So, you know, if they see something that they don't like, they're going to take a picture of it and they're going to let everybody know about it.
Sure.
So, that's something that hasn't happened here yet, but that's something that, that could be down the road. So that,
So I did a thanks, Mike, on the information. So I think if I'm reading this correctly, from January 1 through December 31, we had 41 overflow events, if I'm reading the page correctly. And so I'm assuming when I look at your basically your fact sheet on the E. coli numbers, things like that, it does appear, at least, and again, you'll be able to maybe comment a little bit on this, but it appears that we actually kind of went up a little bit in a couple of those categories under the E. coli chart.
Yeah.
So, I also know that there were multiple heavy rain events we had last year that the year prior we didn't really have. And so I'm assuming there's a direct correlation between those overflow events and the E. coli numbers.
Yeah, the overflows. Now, I do my best in May, so, some of the overflows probably happen in the spring, typically heavier rains in the spring. So, there would be some correlation if you look at the 2012 numbers. Of course, they were so dry, it wouldn't be a dry weather test, but the numbers were way down. But there are some things that go on with the E. coli. Tri-Lakes did a diagnostic study, and they found this last year in 2019 that they had multiple events that the E. coli numbers kept increasing. And the author of the study found a research paper that showed that as the soil becomes super saturated with repeated storms, E. coli can no longer hang under the soil particles and get washed into the streams and rivers. And so I think that the spike that you see on that chart in 2013 is probably a result of the flooding that happened in the spring of 2013. There should be a correlation. We should benefit by getting the two overflows. They have mitigation projects coming, but it may take a few years depending on what happened the other one to really kind of sort out where we're at. Hopefully we'll see
our
kind of two different trend lines.
Sure.
With the completion of our tour project, should not be
significantly. Right. Well, and I think the other piece of that is that obviously we're designing our long-term control plan to a 10-year, one-hour event, right?
10-year, one-hour event, according to item, we are not, will not be allowed to discharge. If we discharge, then we're violating of our permit.
Unless it's above that 10-year, one-hour threshold.
Correct.
Right? So, now again, it appears, and I think data is showing, that we're getting more of those 50-year and 100-year storms than what we used to get, right? But, that being said, with those rains that we potentially, and I'd be curious, Mike, how much of our discharges came under that 10-year, one-hour threshold versus those that came above. The only reason I say that is because if we have a lot of those that are above the 10-year threshold, the project won't help us all that much. But if you have a lot of them that are below that 10-year, one-hour threshold, then those are the ones we'll capture instead of discharging. So I agree with you, depending on what those storms look like.
Yeah.
So will this branch out into the county as well, what you're sharing with us, or is it just related to the city at this point?
It's just related to the city at this point. There is some speculation that the county might be on the list for new MS4s. So but typically if the county's designated as an MS4, it's the urban and urbanizing areas that are designated for an MS0 program. But let's just say the issue
sure.
at this point.
Well, right now,
whether it actually happens, I don't know.
Right now, we're in the startup of Whitley County sewer districts,
yeah.
and which is septic system elimination because of various reasons. In some places around the county are worse than others, but right now, you're seeing a lot of stuff from the septic system that had deteriorated to the point that it can no longer produce and maintain, you know. The levels that they need to prevent bacteria and E. coli and so on. So,
yeah.
So I'm just saying, we're just at the info stages of in that at this time. But
yeah.
You'll see a lot of subdivisions out there that are several years old that may have some challenges.
Yeah, getting the septic systems, the problems under control, that's obviously going to help the E. coli situation.
Right. Right, so we should see some reward from that as well.
Yeah, we should see some of that,
yeah.
The family self-assessments and the outlays can be a big source of E. coli. Also, making sure that citizens in the city are aware of the rules of the state of the outlays is important.
Some wildlife here. Minimum control measure 4, minimum control measure 5, both have to do with construction.
Yeah, construction and post-construction.
Mm-hmm.
So
the reason I ask that question is you're kind of you're our inspector for those construction projects, correct?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So one of the things that that I'll be talking about at the retreat is about the fact that we charge very, very minimal for effectively for stormwater permitting.
Yeah.
Within our county for a construction project, and I know that the amount of work that you do is a lot on those sites. So, just in a brief moment, can you talk a little bit about what those services entail, so that the council has an understanding of what you do on our behalf at construction sites?
Okay. Well, it kind of starts in the planning part process. So they send me copies of what they call the stormwater pollution prevention plan, and I review those plans to make sure they're complying with the things that I hear requires as far as controlling sediment and trying to control runoff to prevent erosion. So the city, the MS4 has its own permitting process, so I can review that. Now. In the city, I also reviewed the stormwater management calculations and the storm sewer calculations. So those are submitted with the project. I review those calculations to make sure they're acceptable also. And then when the project was under construction, I tried to go out about once a month on active projects just to inspect the sill fences and the riprap and different measures that they put in place to control the runoff and reduce erosion. And also kind of keep an eye on when they're constructing the retention basins or storm sewers, if I see something that doesn't look right, put it on that, I'll note that on my inspection reports. So I generated an inspection report and I sent that by email. Might show it at least my supervisor. And I also send it to typically the project engineer or the developer. And contractors represented so that it gets a copy of my inspection report once a month.
So I think it's important for you all to know kind of what John does, because I think he does a good job of coming in and kind of talking about the stormwater things and the obviously the MS4 portion of that, but I think it's good to kind of understand what his role is in all of this. And so. I would say woefully inadequate. So, questions of John?
If you have questions outside of the meeting, I'm happy to talk to you about
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for your report. Appreciate it. Okay. Next up is the Whitley County Humane Society, Abby.
Some things to highlight, things that we're super proud of. We had a record-breaking year in 2019 as far as adoptions and line release rate. So 429 cats adopted in the year, the biggest number we've ever had. 23 out-of-state adoptions, so it's kind of cool to see where everyone comes from for these animals, including Michigan, New Hampshire, Utah, Illinois, Ohio, Florida, Pennsylvania, Tennessee. They literally come from anywhere, for cats even, which is pretty impressive. Live release rate for dogs and cats was awesome this year. It was our highest live release rate for cats at 88%, up 16% from last year, meaning those cats left our building alive, whether it be an adoption, return back to the owner, a TNR cat, so they, like a barn cat, they were spayed and neutered and returned back to where they came from. We also implemented same-day cat adoptions this year, which we haven't done in the past, so we weren't losing adopters in that 1-2 business day process that we were doing before, where they could go to Fort Wayne Animal Care and Controller at SPCA and get one in the same day, so we were losing out on those adopters. Now we're doing the same-day cat adoptions, and obviously the numbers prove that it helped us out tremendously.
What would be the pro and con regarding a same-day adoption type scenario?
That they go somewhere else.
Sure.
If they don't do it same day, we only do it for cats because adopting a cat isn't as big of a decision as adopting a dog.
Sure.
For dogs, we also do meet and greet if they have current dogs at home so that we know if they're going to get along. So, like I said, we don't do same day dog adoptions.
Sure.
Very often, but for cats, because there's so many cats and there's so many choices to places to go, we are very excited that we started to do meet and greet adoptions.
Thank you.
I have a quick question for you about
yes.
the out-of-state adoption. Is it social media that's driving that?
Yeah. So specifically, we have one kitten foster mom that has an Instagram page, and she's got like 700,000 followers that follow these kittens' journey of growing up. And that's where most of the out-of-state adoptions come from. I know the Utah one, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, they literally drive, Utah lady drove like 26 hours.
Utah.
Picked up a kitten and turned right back around and went back to Utah. Like, she brought a fruit platter and was like, hey, thanks for what you do, and turned right back around and went to work the next day.
Wow.
Yeah. We also, I mean, for us, we have a Facebook page, we have an Instagram, but like I said, most of the out-of-staters are from Barb's Instagram just because she has so many followers. Some other numbers that we're very excited about, we returned 144 dogs back to their original owners.
Is that because of chipping, or is that because of what?
A little bit of everything.
Okay.
Microchipping, so every dog that leaves our building is microchipped.
Uh-huh.
So if it does come in again, we know where it belongs. Social media, Facebook, there's a Lost Dog to Columbia City Facebook page.
Yeah.
And then just them calling and reporting a lost,
gotcha.
A lost report, yeah. A fun number, we've done neuter for a nickel in the past 4 years. We've neutered 825 cats in 4 years, which is just amazing. So 825 cats that aren't going to be reproducing and giving me more kittens.
In the last how many years?
In the last 4 years.
4 years.
Yep.
Okay.
46% of our adoptions in 2019 were from Whitley County residents. 42% of them were from neighboring counties. We don't have our community cat program as set in stone as what Portland Animal Care and Control and SPCA does. So they aren't seeing as many kittens as we are, unfortunately. But in our favor, we have kittens when they don't. So we do see a lot of out-of-county people that when they don't have those kittens to adopt out, they come to us. So we are bringing people in from out-of-county as well. Every single animal that left our building this year was spayed or neutered before adoption, which has never happened before. We usually have to send them out on a spay neuter contract. But we have an appointment with Hope for Animals every week. 10 animals go in every single Wednesday for spay and neuter. So 550 animals got spay and neutered before adoption last year. The rest of them came in already spay and neutered, but that was the first year that we didn't have to do the spay and neuter contract. So we were pretty excited about that.
I think it's pretty interesting to notice here in your report that you sent us. I think we all generally think about dogs and cats at the shelter, but you get 11 guinea pigs and 6 rabbits.
Right. And usually rabbits fly for quite a while, and we have rabbits flying out the door this year, and I'm not sure what changed, but like we have people waiting for rabbits. Like, give us your rabbits. We have people who want to feed them, which is just crazy. This year we only saw rabbits and guinea pigs, but in the past we've had ferrets, chinchillas, hamsters.
Are those surrendered to you, or? Okay.
Yeah. A lot of people think that the smaller pocket pets are easier to care for, but they're really not. You have to change their bedding all the time, and their cage stinks, and it's not as easy as they thought the size would take care of it. And then our last thing that we're super excited about, kind of on the same page as the same day adoptions, we decreased our length of stay for cats almost by a month. So they're moving out much quicker, which is taking less resources on our part. They're not as stressed, they don't get sick because they're not there for as long of a period. So those are some things that we were super proud of this year. On the very last page, then you have a kind of a breakdown of municipal numbers, which is what Lizzie told me you were kind of interested in. I'm not sure, do you have specific questions for me, or?
Help me understand what the over-under allotment means.
So you can see in the income spot, that's how much each municipality pays us.
Right.
So to kind of break down what it covers, so like Cherubusco, we didn't use all $2,000 of that dollars. We have $812 for 7-ish animals left.
Gotcha.
That we didn't use that money for. So for the city of Columbia City, we only took in 7-ish animals extra than what you didn't pay for, basically. So
it looks like everybody's pretty much
besides the county,
getting more than they paid for.
Right. Yes. So you can see in 2018 the total number of intakes. So for you guys, 276. Went down a little bit to 239. We just can't really predict how many kittens we're going to see, and that's definitely the majority of our intakes. And you can see broken down in the different quarters. Second and third quarter are when kittens come in, so that's when intakes spike, when we're the most full. On a typical, regular full of kittens day, we'll have anywhere from 100 to 150 cats in the building. Whereas right now we only have about 30 because it's just off season with cold weather. They don't breed as often in cold weather. We will probably get hit much harder and much sooner this year with kittens because we haven't had such a harsh winter. So we are taking in our only 30 cats right now and expecting it to hit us anytime now. So that's kind of the breakdown of how much everyone pays and how many animals we've taken in, if you have any questions for me.
What are the charges that you charge, like people bring in, they just surrender animals?
For owner surrender, there is a $50 owner surrender fee if you're in Whitley County. for out-of-county animals, there is a $100 alert surrender fee, and it's at our discretion if we have the room to add it. Since they're not from our county, we say that we will take care of our county before out-of-county, and they can call us back or check in later if we don't have a room right now.
But if there's strays and then...
For strays, we just ask for a donation if at all possible, if there's no set fee, if they're just down on the side of the road or in the backyard or whatever.
In general, what's your average operating budget? You can just give me a general. Let me tell you where I'm going. What I'm trying to understand is, if you know, out of your total operating budget, does basically the municipal income, does that make up half of your budget? Does it take up a quarter of your budget? Do you happen to know?
I said it's about half.
It's about half of the budget? Okay. And the only reason I'm asking that is because obviously, I mean, this is, so a long time ago, the decision was made by the city to have the Humane Shelter be our animal control organization effectively, right? So our officers, if they catch a stray dog or something, we bring it to you guys. If we, frankly, if there's a temperament test that we need, you guys will help us do that. Like, there's things like that you provide. So the reason I'm saying all that is that out of $56,000 that you got in 2019, basically half of that was paid for by the city, right? And the reason I'm saying that is because I think you do provide a wonderful service for our city residents. I think it's well worth the money that we pay. I would say maybe I'm a little disappointed with that double the numbers from Columbia City are coming from the county, and they're contributing the same amount that we are. But I get it. Everyone has their own budget constraints. It is what it is. But I do think for the city's purpose, for what you provide for the city, what you provide for our residents, what you provide for the animals of our community, I just want to thank you for what you guys do. It makes a big difference. It really does. And we're thankful you're our animal control agency. So.
One thing I guess I'd like to say, too, is, you know, this is probably going to get turned into an article, and it's a good opportunity for you being here to talk. What are some ways that the general public can support what you're doing?
We can always accept donations, towels, bedding, things that you to take to the door, you can take as well. Volunteering, offering. You can come in and walk a dog, just put it out with a kennel, come in and play with the cat. Sometimes, the elderly, you can come in and just sit in the cat room. It's good therapy for them, but the cats need a community, that socialization and de-stressing. So, yeah, fostering, volunteering, donating, sharing a Facebook page even, like just sharing animals that are adoptable, getting the word out there. So,
do you need an age limit for volunteers? I know lots of children would like to volunteer to be with parents.
10 years old with a parent, and then it's 16 years old.
Okay.
As an aside, I think my assistant's trying to get a hold of you.
You
did? Okay, good. Okay, good. Our youth council loves every year going and volunteering and stuff, so hopefully we get that worked out. So,
I thought maybe
you.
The Daniel family.
Oh, well. So 2011, we adopted two cats from the shelter. We still have one of those cats. And after our first cat passed, she really showed that she enjoyed being a single cat. So let's say it that way. We got them together, and then as soon as the other one passed, she all of a sudden became the most loving cat in the world.
I had
so
that happen personally, too.
It happened, yeah. I mean, you know, so in any case, so that's why we'll be waiting to get another cat. Great. Other questions for Abby? Okay. Thank you, Abby.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks for the work you guys do.
Thank you.
Okay, next up is Ordinance 2020-1. Do I have a motion to read by title only?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Jennifer, seconded by Dan. Further discussion? All those in favor, show by the usual sign. It is unanimous. Please read Ordinance number 2020-1 by title only.
Ordinance 2020-1, an ordinance amending Chapter 75, Traffic Schedules of Title 7 of the Code of Ordinances of the City of Columbia City, Indiana,
remember this from last time. There was the addition of West Longfellow instead of just Longfellow in there, so that changes. That change did occur. Any questions, comments about that, concerns? Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve ordinance number 2020-1 on second and final reading?
So moved.
I'll second it.
Motion by Jennifer, second by Jenny. Further discussion? All those in favor, show by the usual sign. It is unanimous of those present. Next up, for those of you following along, this is page 18, is ordinance number 2020-2. Do I have a motion to read by title only?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Jennifer, second by Walt. Further discussion? All those in favor, show by the usual sign. It is unanimous. Please read ordinance number 2020-2 by title only.
Ordinance 2020-2, an ordinance amending Chapter 73, bicycles, unicycles, three-wheeled cycles, and golf carts of Title 7 of the Code of Ordinances of the City of Columbia City, Indiana.
You remember this is the golf cart ordinance where...
Two people per seat.
I apologize?
It's two people per seat. No, I'm just explaining what it was.
Oh, yes, thank you. I'm sorry, yes, it's two people per seat, thank you. Any questions, comments, concerns about that? Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve ordinance number 2020-2 on second and final reading?
Second. Okay.
Motion by Dan, second by Jennifer. Any further discussion, questions? All those in favor, show by the usual sign. It is unanimous of those present. Okay, so let's move to ordinance number 2020-04. Do I have a motion to read by title only?
So moved.
I'll second it.
Motion by Walt, seconded by Jenny. Further discussion? All those in favor, show by the usual sign. It is unanimous of those present. Please read ordinance number 2020-04 by title only.
Ordinance 2020-04, an ordinance enacting and adopting the supplement to the Code of Ordinances for the City of Columbia City, Indiana, and declaring an emergency. Yes.
Do you want to describe what this ordinance is?
Okay. What this is all the ordinances every year have to be codified, any of them that we've passed. And so we didn't get the last one done, so that's what this one is. And the next one is for the second codification. So we have to pass an ordinance that adopts all these ordinances.
So it codifies all the ordinances?
Yeah.
Okay.
And now they should all be up to date on that.
So, as a reminder to the council, when we do these, the reason of saying declare an emergency, by doing that, we're able to pass on one reading rather than having to pass two readings or something that doesn't need more than one reading. So,
should we acknowledge that Jenny is like.
Okay, so yes, thank you for that. To understand that ordinance 2020-04 and ordinance 2020-05. For your information, Jenny, we're not left out. There is actually a signature page.
Okay.
So just so you know, you will get a chance to sign it.
Right.
There is a signature page. It just didn't get into the Dropbox. So, because I asked that question. Okay. Any questions regarding 2020-04? Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve ordinance number 2020-04 on the first and final reading?
I'll motion move it.
Motion by Jenny, seconded by Dan. Further discussion? All those in favor, show by the usual sign. It is unanimous of those present. Next up is ordinance number 2020-05. Do I have a motion to read by title only?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Jennifer, seconded by Walt. Further discussion? All those in favor, show by the usual sign. It's unanimous of those present. Please read ordinance number 2020-05 by title only.
Ordinance 2020-5, an ordinance enacting and adopting a supplement to the Code of Ordinances for the City of Columbia City, Indiana, and declaring an emergency.
Any questions, comments, concerns about this? Second codification. Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve ordinance number 2020-05 on first and final reading?
So moved.
Second. Motion by Dan, seconded by Jennifer. Further discussion? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It is unanimous of those present. Before we go to department head reports, I noted in the minutes from our last meeting that we had decided to table the discussion about animals at events, and I think the discussion was take 2 weeks, contemplate, talk to people, see what your thoughts are. We don't have to talk about it tonight. I just noted that in the minutes, so we can bring it up at the next meeting if you'd like, or we can talk about it again. I just, because it was in the minutes, I wanted to make sure that, you know.
We would like you to talk about it because we need to hear you guys have a difference of opinion. Okay. Okay. And there hasn't been much here tonight
sure.
that you've discussed.
Sure. So as a, so as a kind of a precursor, at the last meeting, there was a lot of discussion. Jennifer's chair of the Ordinance Review Committee and Dan's a part of it as well. And there was discussion in the Ordinance Review Committee regarding animals being animals attending downtown events. And so the discussion basically was surrounding whether or not the city should really, because right now we have an ordinance that effectively says animals can't really be at downtown events, okay? And so the discussion point was whether or not the city should even be involved in saying that one way or another, or so keeping the current ordinance and enforcing it, or kind of taking more of a hands-off approach and saying organization A, B, C, D, whoever is effectively closing streets for a downtown event, it's up to you to decide whether or not dogs, cats, lizards, whatever can come to the downtown event. So that was the discussion point at the last meeting, and I think there was a little bit of discussion about some different perspectives on that, and at the end of the day, it was decided that we would table it, consider it, and potentially come back to it to discuss the different points, and maybe what direction the city should head in that ordinance, kind of putting that ordinance together. Is that a fair compilation of kind of what happened last night? Okay.
Well, I know the people I talked to, as much as everybody loves their animals, blah, 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 it's the general consensus of the people I talked to said it'd be nice not to have them down here during events, but at the same time, I asked them who should be responsible for saying that. You know, I mean, could we have opportunities for the animals to have shelter dogs to come up and, you know, they do that on Saturdays and, you know, some Friday night. So if you allow them, then you can have your dog on
town. And I think that alludes to the confusion that kind of currently exists, which is how come this person can bring a dog downtown and I can't bring a dog downtown? Or, you know, apparently someone who lives in an apartment downtown can have a pet and walk it through the event because that's their living area, but but if you're just visiting downtown, you can't have a dog, so.
Sure.
The general consensus for the people I talk to, they would rather have a dog stay out. But then again, you know, we've already got our ordinance for an event. You know, we talked about having the event,
Well, at the end of the day, that's what this all comes down to, is determining what we want to do so that there's a clean approach to this so that the officers in Kansas City know whether they need to ask a dog to leave or ask somebody to ask a dog to leave.
Sure. So what? Let me understand what I think you're saying, Dan, and that's, you know, maybe I'll ask the question instead. So the question is if we were to go more of the hands-off approach and say, listen, it's up to the event organizers to determine who is allowed in, what is allowed in, et cetera. certainly that would point the individuals who didn't want dogs, who didn't want cats, who didn't want lizards, who didn't want, you know, chinchillas or whatever to go to those events, that it would, they would need to go talk to the event organizer specifically. And so I guess my question is, did you get the sense that if they don't want that, they would rather maybe brag to somebody, or do they just want to kind of, we don't, with period, period, we don't want anything down there?
Kind of period, they don't want anything.
Okay.
But at the same time, you know, we also have respect the fact when there's a lot of the animal love.
Sure.
More of that,
that's
why it's company
exemption sort of to them. But you're right. I mean, if you're an individual walking downtown and you have a deathly fear of dogs, whether it's a shelter dog or whether it's someone's pet, you're not going to want to go near them.
I remember also how the animals that are there for
companions. Oh yeah, they're being here.
You know, I've seen those guys.
Yep.
Well, you know, and again, where Dan's coming from, I can agree with this concept. And again, the officer involved would have to be at his discretion to make that judgment call. And you know, I think if people are that concerned or sincere about the situation, I think the event organizer can maybe help coach them of why they're doing what they're doing. I think us as council needs to follow the ordinance the way it's written or modify it if it needs to be modified. But again, I think that at the end of the day, we want to make sure it's a safe place for everybody to be. The event, you know, they can, again, talk to the event organizer and the officer has the discretion. Now, if the event organizer, if somebody complains to the event organizer during the event, then he goes out and asks to remove the dog and doesn't want to do that, then that's where he brings in the officers to review the situation and make a discretion call of what transpired. But I, you know, again, I like animals, but again, this is, you have to keep it in perspective of what's going on. You know, is it the 4-H fair or is it Old Settlers? Sometimes that will drive different decisions. And so that's kind of where I'm coming from.
I believe our animal ordinances are very, very well written and set up to be the safety net for our public. And so when, you know, when they bring this, it's so confusing, and there's so many options, but it's kind of, you know, brought it up last time where I watched it happen on a Friday night when one of our police officers had to go and tell them to remove the animal from the, to follow our orders. But of course, that created a scene.
And maybe, I really don't know, but the people who need the animal to help, for, you know, to help them, do they carry a card or
they're not required to carry any card, and the only dogs that are exempted are animals and are ones that are ADA compliant, and all you can really ask them is what disability the dog is trained to. You know, is this dog specifically trained to, you know, emotional support dogs don't fit in there, therapy dogs don't fit in there, only ADA compliant service animals, and I guess you could have a miniature horse, but that falls under ADA compliance. But you really can't ask a lot of questions. You can only ask a couple, and they're not required to be, those animals are not required to have a vest or anything that says they're a service animal, and they're not required to carry any paperwork or anything like that. And that's one of the problems. People can go out and get a card that says it's an emotional support animal, and there's no checking on that, so.
Okay. I didn't know.
Like, the people I talk to are avid dog lovers. So it's not, some of the people I talk to were not, so I don't have any animals, don't care.
Sure.
So really, that's kind of what I mean. Mm-hmm.
Ladies?
A lot of people I talk to, honestly, they don't care whether or not dogs are there or not. So, I mean, I see both sides of it myself. I know as having a dog, I personally would never take my dog there because they'd be hyper. But then it goes on to the owner itself and what judgment is the owner going to make and what is that dog going to do in a public space. So we don't know. I mean, there is a lot of people that are afraid of any animal, let alone a dog.
So there's not a whole lot of direction there.
There's not. There's not.
I mean, not to, obviously I don't want to prolong the discussion or anything like that, but I think, as I remember the request from the Ordinance Review Committee was, give us some direction so we can either craft an ordinance, change the ordinance, or just leave it alone. Right? That was effectively the request.
Right. I think leaving it alone plus employees at a disadvantage at this point because I've seen it happen. And I don't want to put them in a position to have a negative liability for them. I said, I like this fact. I don't like that. Put our police force in a situation like that. Mm-hmm.
My concern is if we collect it on each committee or whoever's having the event downtown is how is the citizens going to know about it?
Sure.
That's my biggest thing because it's going to be, yes, I can take it to the farmer's market. No, I can't take it to Old Settlers. Mm-hmm. The back and forth thing, which may honestly escalate even more because people have the mixed information.
Sure.
So,
sitting in that committee, there was a whole lot of questions that came up in reference to this. Number one, do we really want to be in the business of regulating everything when we already say if you have this, this, and this, then you can take your dog down the street and do things. But then we're saying in this particular area you can't. Or do we need to clearly define those areas, number one. If we are going to make an area where dogs are not allowed, where do you post signage? Where exactly are those dogs not allowed to put the police in a very peculiar position when they have people downtown in their apartments with animals that are going to need to go to the rescue. You can't just exclude them for this whole block of time and say your dog can't go outside. That puts them in a very awkward position. The big question was we're putting them in a very awkward position of knowing exactly what the boundaries are when it'd be very difficult to clarify those boundaries. And so should we even regulate it at all? And we always say, if your dog got its rabies shot and you're in control of your animal, it has to be on a leash, isn't that your responsibility?
She's right. That's how we arrived at this, because we got really aggressive about, oh, we're going to have to make this rule and this rule and this rule. And then pretty soon it was like, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Well, in the current ordinance, for downtown events, there's an exemption for people that live in apartments and stuff to take their dog out to go to the restroom, go for a walk. They can go through the event area, but they can't, you know, they don't get to just walk their dog around the event area and free. They get to, you know, if it's in front of their house, they can go out and get out of the area to take their dog for a walk into the restroom.
It goes back to the ultimate responsibility. If something happens, who is on the law and who gets sued?
The owner of the pet.
Yeah.
But if we're in charge, that was the other question that Marcia posed, is if we're in charge of regulating that and we fail to do so, doesn't that bring us into it as well?
It does.
We're going to be there one way or the other, no matter what.
I do agree with Wolf. I think if we approve the permit, we're going to be included whether we have an ordinance or not. So, I mean, that to me, that weighs a little less heavy on me as much as the, to Dan's point, what position does it put our police officers in? And, frankly, and I'm not trying to straddle the fence here, but to Dan's point, how does the information get out to the public? And now, with that being said, information isn't getting out to the public now anyways. People don't know that there's not they're not allowed to have dogs at downtown events by any means and stuff, but I almost wonder if it makes sense for the committee to draft something of what that would look like and maybe bring it back for bigger debate.
Does another downtown respond?
Oh, that's a good question. I can certainly reach out
to say Warsaw or any of the other towns and say, hey, how do you guys handle this?
I will reach out to other cities.
Yeah, reach out to other cities and see where they're at.
Warsaw would be a great one since they have a lot of downtown functions on, though.
Well, if I say Warsaw or whatever, I'm sure they have different activities that are going on within their, you know, different parts of their town. I'm sure somebody walking around or whatever.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're right, Jenny. They got a lot of events. They got, you know, they got concerts down
First Friday.
First Friday. I mean, they just have all kinds of things.
Yeah, like I said, I will check in with my fellow mayors to see who has, if anybody has those kind of regulations. Okay. I'll pass that information on to the committee. That's okay. Okay. Two other, well, actually, I'll let the department do their thing and then I'll do my thing. Scott!
So let the council know that Officer Branke started Monday and seems to be going well. He went through all HR and he starts tomorrow doing some FTOing with Sergeant Inslee. We had coffee with the cop this weekend with the state police, sheriff's department, DNR, and that went well at McDonald's. We had five officers, sheriff's department had five officers, I believe, and DNR and state police each had officers, and we had several citizens come up and chat with us, and the kids, and so that was good. Our testing for hiring is this weekend at the school. We have our agility test and the written test back here. And 16 applicants. The vehicle that was authorized last meeting, we've put our name on the list and hopefully the company can actually get one. And then February 10th is when InDigital arrives and we start our testing for our geolocation of wireless 911, start receiving 911 calls from cell phones and in our dispatch center from inside the geolocation of the borders of Columbia City. So, again, that's a pilot program with the state of Indiana, and that they have done all the setup and they have a good success rate with their little test areas they've done, so we'll see how that goes. Hopefully it goes as planned and we'll save emergency response time of at least 2 to 4 minutes a call. So there'll be no transfers of 911 calls that come in by cell phone to go to another location than to be transferred to here. So we're hopeful on that. So more to follow.
Great. Question to Scott. Thank you. Mike.
As I mentioned before, we had a grant from IPEP that we purchased some extra AEDs, so we now have four of them. Three of them are located at three different spots at our facility, and I tasked my staff with installing one on our service truck. So they have done that and made an insulated box and put that in our service truck. So we also have one that's mobile now, too. It is labeled, so it is available. If anybody would happen to need it, it would be on our truck. Long-term control plan is coming along, getting the piping in, the sheeting's completed at on the Ellsworth site, excavating on Willie Street. That's like I mentioned earlier during the Board of Works, the sand that they're pulling out there looks like flake sand. It's real light colored, white, fluffy sand, just like looks like they're digging out a large sandbox. Forming the walls at Jefferson to pour there. I received our phosphorus construction permit by them this week, so hopefully that project will be moving right along. And I should know this week when the cast in place piping should take place out on 600, which will complete that sewer line out there as far as being redone. And the Board of Works approved change order number 3, which is part of contract A, and we'll be installing a new control panel at the 350 bus station, and also do some radio upgrades at our facility, the water plant, dispatch, east and west tower. That because we have a couple new radios in the system now, and they had to put a lot of patch cords and different things in to make it work and integrate it with our current system. So this will be an upgrade to that and hopefully take care of some of the ongoing problems we've had with our SCADA system. And then eventually we'll have to upgrade our other radio suite, which I'll get into that when we get to retreat. So I have a plan for that. So.
Thank you.
Probably in my written report, there's been a lot of emphasis on training. That happens this time of year. I make the guys stay indoors, and they do a lot of focus on training, which I'll get into depth a little bit more at the mayor's retreat. Other than that, for the next couple of days, I may be down at the playhouse and playing some sand.
Back to the town. Thank you. Sean.
We're nearly completed hooking up the new homes in Cambridge and Chesapeake out there. We only have a couple of empty lots left out there to go, and that'll be the end of new customers for a while, I believe. Our guys are also working on inventory right now, trying to get that buttoned up. We did install temporary power for the CFO mitigation project at Whitley Street. To replace a old generator that was running 24/7, it was loud and the neighbors didn't appreciate it. So we gave them a quote to just build a temporary three-phase line to it so they could get rid of that generator. And we completed that this week, and just waiting for them to have their end buttoned up as well. Line north, the traffic lights we just replaced a few months ago, failed a couple weeks ago. They found the problem. Got it fixed, the $25 part and a $60,000 setup. So that seems to be par for the course. To be clear,
it's a $25 part inside a $60,000 setup. You didn't have to pay $60,000 to put the $25.
We did, yeah. That was a very extensive installation. Tree trimming was still going on, so if you get a citizen that calls about their lines being cleared, we're out doing that again. We do have an upcoming item inspection as well, fuel pumps at the maintenance facility. We're working on getting the reports filed with them and preparing for that. And we did earlier get a new generator approved for our maintenance facility. It's nearly 40 years old and no longer runs the one we currently have. So I think we drove our feet on that one about as long as we could. So that'll be coming soon. And keep Angie, our secretary / meter reader / do it all, the brains of the operation, will be out for the next week and a half with a surgery. So, wish her the best if you know her is here.
Question to Sean. Probably bears repeating about not burying the Phillips ditch with those pipes. So, if one of you want to address that, then the council is aware that we are not putting Phillips ditch underground.
For those of you who have seen it, there is a large amount of pipe that runs parallel to the Phillips ditch down at the park, and there's been a lot of comments and questions being asked in reference if the city was enclosing the ditch, and you're shaking your head because you must have facilitated one of those questions.
I have heard this question.
Yes, and I clarified with Mike, that is not happening. So
that is our actual sewer line pipe.
There's a lot of pipe down there.
Well, I wouldn't be. I think we're doing it for the park. I'm kidding.
So that was important.
Mark, we're working on Phillips Ditch, trying to fill that in. $5 dance tickets are on sale. The dance is February 7th and 8th. We've got about 200 tickets still left. Most of them are for Friday night, so Saturday night there's not as many left. They're $20 each, and you can get them at our office, or you can call the office and get them that way. I'll be at IPRA, the training for State Parks and Recreation, February 11th through 13th. The ice rink is still open on Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. And on February 16th, we're having an event where people can come, probably mostly girls, skate with Anna and Elsa. So they'll be at the rink from 12 to 6, skating with anybody there. Got a lot of people interested in that, just what's on Facebook, so kind of interesting to see that response. Baseball and softball registration started today online, or yesterday online, and you can come in our office on February 10th and register in the office at that point.
working on plans to convert the concession stand into all bathrooms. So we'll hear more about that in the retreat. Kind of not as easy as it sounds, but because we're in a floodplain. So working on that. And we did also get two more AEDs like Mike did. Those will be in two of our vehicles. And we currently have one at the pool and one in our office. So we have two more. And then we've also done some work at Irish Glen Trail. That's a trail that goes from Morse's Park up to Irish Glen. It's a very steep hill. It was stair-stepped with railroad ties that were rotten, and a lot of stone had washed out of that. And so we pretty much took the railroad ties out and made it just a hill. It is not ADA compliant, but we'll try to make it as smooth as we can and make it easier to get up and down. It's just not, probably shouldn't have ever been put there in the first place. It's pretty steep. So we're just trying to make it better.
Question to Mark? If I learned anything from your report, I learned that Tommy's the one spreading.
That is absolutely true. I was not familiar with Anna and whatever.
Elsa. I would argue Frozen than one, but that's my opinion. Oh, I'm sorry, I cut you. Walter.
Nothing.
Okay. A couple things from me. First, I want to take a moment to recognize Gene Heckman, who recently passed away. Gene was really a pillar of the community, Whitley County community, really, but had a tremendous impact on local government as a whole in Whitley County. So I want to just recognize his legacy, and I think his visitation is tomorrow, and then I think the actual funeral is on Thursday. But want to just kind of throw out a thanks to Gene for all of his work to make Whitley County what it is today. A couple of other things to note. First, council members and department head members, department head members, remember that the next council meeting will be picture day. I think we're going 5 to 6:15 on that, something like that time frame. So please come a little early before the council meeting, get your picture taken, some of us will jump in right after Board of Works and we'll go from there. So please do that. Public notice that we will be having next Thursday and Friday, the 6th and 7th, we'll be having our citywide retreat for staff, departments, elected officials, etc. Public is always invited to that. Up in Shipshawana at Bluegate Garden Inn. And we're excited about kind of setting that trajectory for the next 5 years. Couple other things. A lot of legislation going fast and furious. It's a legislature right now. This is supposed to be a short, quiet session. It's not a short and quiet. It is a short, but it is not a quiet session. So keeping an eye on that the whole time. We do have a trash committee meeting tomorrow to talk trash, and I think what's maybe that we are talking trash. I didn't say trash talk. In any case, we will be having some discussion tomorrow about whether or not to go back to one pickup because of the cost. Because it's getting significant, right, Rosie? Mm-hmm. There's just more and more and more stuff coming into the city that's becoming a major issue. And so we're going to have to walk a fine line between punishing those who are following the rules, but also handling those individuals that are bringing stuff in from the outside and really raising the cost to our city residents. At the end of the day, that's the issue. So we'll be discussing that. Lunch with the Mayor is on Thursday at noon on Facebook. Friday, I do have a U.S. 30 meeting over in Warsaw. We're hoping to do some strategy on that. I wish I had more to tell you than what I just did, but that's about all I have because we cannot get NDOT to move forward. So we keep working on that. I will say I did get a peek at a study coming from the regional chamber about the transportation dollars that we get versus Northeast Indiana gets versus the other districts. And as anticipated, we are woefully inadequate when it comes to the amount of dollars we get compared to those districts. And so I am sure you will see some advocacy of changing that around, especially by our legislative delegation. I think that is all I do have one more thing. I'm sorry, I put it right here. Okay. I don't know that I mentioned it at the last meeting, so I'm going to mention it now. I have an appointment to the Region 3A Board of Directors. As you may know, the Region 3A is a development regional planning organization that meets out at the Northeastern RENC. They have four meetings scheduled for 2020, March 19th, June 18th, September 17th, and November 19th. I have an appointment to that board. If you have an interest in being appointed to that board, please let me know. I need to appoint somebody. And I think that's it. Daniel. Jennifer.
Last week we went to the AIM training in Indianapolis.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic opportunity to prepare for some different things that we might encounter in our city, to talk to other cities and find out how they do things, where they are, network a little bit. In all, one of the biggest things that I think we talked all great about back was that we should be really glad to live where we live. We have a fantastic community where everybody's kind of working together to move us forward, and a lot of infighting. We value a difference of opinions on things, but we're still able to get things done. I learned that that's not the case in the parts of the state, so I feel very fortunate to be here and to be working in this city. So. Thank you.
Nothing. Brad? An audience? Questions for us? No? We'll say Brad if you do have any questions for us. Okay, we'll call the meeting adjourned.